One in five people will experience mental illness in any given year. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and one of the local events coming up is Thursday, May 21st at the Grand Rapids Area Library. It's a nature walk with KEXC staff phenologist John Latimer. It's at 6:30. It's described as a short nature walk to enjoy the magic of the natural world to recharge. That is also the idea behind a new book by Andre Edwards. It's called Renewal, How Nature Awakens Our Creativity, Compassion, and Joy. Andre Edwards joins us now. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, good morning, Heidi. Great to be here.
So you begin this book by talking about our emotional bonds with nature. I wonder if you can tell us what you mean by that and why you think we should be bonding with nature.
Well, I think that when we have an emotional bond with the natural world, we feel more connected to all of life and we feel more alive. You know, just noting about the facts and the figures of how biodiversity is going down or population is going up or pollution doesn't really grab us as much. But when we feel a connection to the web of life, we really feel connected to all of life. And I think that's really, really important. Being out in nature has so many benefits. I mean, aside from just the physical benefits of hiking or walking, studies are now showing that we're able to reduce stress. We get to be more creative. It reduces the ADHD symptoms. It lowers our blood pressure, and it makes us happier and feel more alive.
You know, I love that. I'm sure you know that phrase from Japan, forest bathing.
Yes, it's so funny. I was just rereading a book by Dr. King Lee on forest bathing. And the notion there is back in the 80s, the Japanese started really looking at what are the impacts of being in a forest and why does it make us feel so alive? And how can we be in a forest where we use all of our senses, our smells, the sights, the sounds, the touch, all of that, and they're discovering that it has some tremendous beneficial effects of just being in forest. And how to be in a forest, what kind of exercises can we do to take in the light, to take in the patterns, the colors, the sounds, all of that. And it's now being, you know, I've heard of several hikes and programs here in the U.S. as well related to that.
You know, on Tuesday mornings on KEXE, we do nature reports from students all across our state. And it seems to me they notice things differently than us adults. And some of the things that they seem to notice or I forget about looking for until I get out in the woods is the colors. I mean, it's amazing what you see out there.
The colors, the scales, the textures, all of it. And, you know, I think with kids, they're just so curious. They have that innate curiosity. And it's in us as well. You know, when we look at the brain studies and say, what is it about in nature that makes us feel alive? Some of the theories, some of them point to things like biophilia, which is our innate affiliation with nature, you know, which we just feel connected. And it goes back to the caveman days when we were in our early, early, early history, where we always were in nature and we feel that connection. And now the people are, even architects are looking at biophilia in terms of the design of buildings and how can we bring nature into the office space with plants, with water, with light, even the colors themselves that are used in the interiors of buildings. Studies are showing that the earth tones tend to put people more at ease and more calm. And it's amazing how few buildings even have plants or water features in buildings. So the more we can look at that and see how we can bring nature indoors and feel connected to that, the better off we are in terms of how productive we are and how calm we are and for our health and benefits.
So what would you recommend for a person that lives in an urban setting? How are they able to connect to nature when they're surrounded by concrete?
Well, you know, that's a really good question because it doesn't take to be out in the boonies. You can just go to a local park, and studies have shown that even, you know, they've had a study they did at Stanford in California where they had a group walk in more of the nature part of the campus, another one walk along the street, how much the one who was more in the woods got more benefit, but there's still benefits from just being surrounded by some greenery. Even looking out the windows, you know, patients in hospitals recover faster when they look outside a window and they see the view of nature than when they see a brick wall. They did another study at Berkeley where they had some students in a eucalyptus grove, and they had a person. One group was looking and marveling at the eucalyptus grove. Another group was looking at a building as well, an urban setting. And then they had a person walk by the grove and accidentally, quote-unquote, accidentally dropped the pen on the ground, and they discovered that the group that had been reveling in nature and being in nature was more pro-social, or what's the term they use, but it's being kinder and more apt to pick up the pencil and help that person than the people that were not. So just being in nature changes who we are inside. And there's tons of studies being done now because there's so much research going on in the brain and what actually is happening in our brain when we're out in the natural world.
We're talking with Andre Edwards. His new book is out. It's called Renewal, How Nature Awakens Our Creativity, Compassion, and Joy. Andre, as we sit here, Michael and I, we have this big window. We get to look out at the Mississippi River and all this green and pine trees. And, you know, it's interesting that you said about the brick wall. So when I work with new folks who are on the air, I tell them to look outside when they talk so that it sounds more natural. And I swear I can hear the difference in my own voice if I record an interview in one of our rooms with no windows compared to when I sit in this room.
Yes, I tell the story in the book of when I was working for a company in San Francisco, and they were growing really fast. And they ended up putting us in this, it was a coffee roastery, and they had remodeled it. But it was basically a room with no windows, and it had one door. And it was so difficult to work in there. And then at one point, the one door we had got locked, jammed somehow. And I was with a coworker, and luckily we were able to get a person to help us open that door. But just being in that environment with no windows and with no sight of nature changes us. It just feels so unnatural. So I make a point of always, at least in my office too, I have a beautiful view of trees. It's an urban setting, but it's a town, but, you know, I can still look at trees in the mountain in the distance, and it really helps.
One of the trends that I've been aware of in some of the major cities, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest and in the Portland area, and when I was growing up, the waterfront was basically industrialized. That's all changed, and there are green spaces and walkways, and I know that when I'm out in nature, there is a difference, and one of the reasons that the audience that you're speaking to now lives in northern Minnesota is for rural, and I suspect that we're healthier because of it.
Yeah, we are, and luckily Portland, Seattle, you know, other cities, San Francisco, have these areas that have greenery, and studies are showing even just being outside, going for a walk, even the diversity within the natural setting has an impact. The more diversity, the more types of sages and grasses and plants, the better it is for us. So it shows why it's so important to have these natural settings, especially in urban settings. And it's not just the urban jungle, but it's also the noise, the chaos, all of that. So these parks create the serenity that we crave, and that's so good for us to be in.
Give us an idea of your book, how you have questions for readers to ask of themselves and to start conversations with others. Give us a little idea on what that part is like in your book.
Well, things that, you know, I was thinking about, okay, we can discuss sort of the benefits of nature, but what are the kinds of things that you can do? Can you go out and get a journal and start writing about your experiences? Can you go out and try and, you know, work with each of your senses individually to see what impact that has on us being in nature? Can you look at your own history and see how did you get involved and what are the draws that drew you into being in nature? Was it more of an intellectual pursuit? Was it more of a social justice angle? And when you're out there in nature doing recreation or sports, see, you know, take a moment to see how that impacts you. Are you feeling the wind against your face? Are you seeing the sights? Are you feeling the water drip if you're kayaking? Whatever it is, to be more sensitive to our connection to nature and our connection to the web of life when we're out there. So the whole point was to create practical applications so that you can experiment with it. And I found that a really useful component to put in the book, as well as resources at the end of the book where I just list a whole series of organizations that are doing this work if you want to learn more.
I wonder, our next interview coming up has to do with climate change and what some folks recently did, some civil disobedience to make a statement about climate change. What do you think about our relationship to the land when it comes to understanding those bigger issues like climate change?
Well, I think that the biggest challenge with climate change is the feedback loops, is understanding the connection between our individual actions and what happens in the natural world, because it's a delay. You know, whatever we're doing now is not going to show up for 20 or 30 years, the real impacts in climate change. I think we're at the point where individual actions can have so much individual effect, but to really have a larger impact, it's going to take a larger community and government effort. And luckily, those groups are really getting out there and trying to point that we need some policy changes. You know, just the UN report that came out about a week ago showing the loss of biodiversity and how that's really going to impact the human race in the world is another wake-up call to say we need to really figure this one out and figure it out fast. So I think, you know, let's think of what we can do individually and in the community, and then how we can compound that and replicate that across the country and across the world. And there are groups doing terrific work in that, but, it, you know, we just need to move really, really fast on it.
I suppose being out in nature, sometimes we may have to schedule that for ourselves. We all live these busy lives. In the next couple of days, how will you interact with nature, Andre?
Well, I try to get out every day a little bit. If it's a walk or a bike ride or something, you know, so that I get my dose of nature on a daily basis. If we're really busy, I think it's just how to carve out that time and try and make it a habit, just like we do exercise. And, you know, we eat and we do all these things on a daily basis to see what is it that attracts us. You know, what is it a sport? Is it walking? Is it biking? Is it running? Whatever it is. And then schedule it into our daily lives. And in that way, we'll notice the effects, especially over time. You know, there's many of some of the research in terms of the health benefits point out that, you know, maybe one prescription could be 30 minutes in nature every day for 30 days. And that could save a whole lot more money than taking all these drugs to reduce blood pressure or other things like that. So I think just scheduling, being mindful of what is it that brings us that peace and that joy, and just scheduling into our daily lives is a good way to start.
Before we go, I wonder if you'd explain how you think nature can awaken compassion in us.
Well, I talk about compassion and conservation, and it's a way of looking at conservation, not so much from a scientific, looking at large area populations and increases and reductions, but taking each animal individually and looking, okay, how can we be more compassionate with the lives of the animals and the plants and all of the life around us so that we see that we are connected to it and not just treat it as a scientific fact and figure. And so I talk about being more aware of our connection, feeling a sense of belonging to the web of life, and then caring more about it. And that's what I talk about at the end of the book, about ecocentric ethic is how I label it. And to think about not just what we take from nature, but what we give back to nature. And how can we give back in a way that restores and regenerates the natural world?
Part of the dilemma, I think, with our relationship with nature comes from our old stories. The Bible will tell us that we are to conquer the land. But on the other hand, we hear the stories of stewardship. And I think that there is a sense, we have a lot of lakes around here. And some people want to think, well, I can do anything with the lakeshore I want. And they get a little bit resentful of the DNR, who says, no, the lake does not belong to you. How do we begin to shift our thinking in terms of the earth as not a possession, but a resource, and it's the source of life?
Yeah, well, it's looking at the earth in terms of a living system and understanding that we are dependent on that living system for our own survival. So, you know, and a part of it may involve looking, tracing back, where do we get our water? Where does our water come from? Where does our electricity come from? Where does our food come from? What's the role of pollinators in creating the food that we eat? So, and then what are the impacts of pollution and clear cutting and all of these things that impact that? So the more we have a real lens on what keeps us alive and what keeps us thriving, then we realize that we're interconnected and we're interdependent. And so it's not so much as a resource that we take, but that we see, wait, we may use this resource, but how do we restore it and regenerate it so that it's there again for future generations? That's the trick, is to understanding the complete connection, that we're not so separate from the natural world, but we're a part of it. And we happen to be one of the dominant species of that, but within that comes responsibility and, as you said, a sense of stewardship. How do we use it wisely? And I talk in the book about beauty, about awe and beauty, you know, how we can be awed by nature, But there's also a sense of beauty, and how that beauty is a sense of an indicator of the integrity of the ecological systems. And oftentimes when the integrity is lost, the beauty is lost. And this goes back to a quote from Aldo Leopold, who really speaks to that whole notion of the sense of beauty in nature and why that is so critical as an indicator of the integrity of the whole natural system.
That's Andre Edwards' new book is Renewal, How Nature Awakens Our Creativity, Compassion, and Joy. You can find information at newssociety.com. That's the publisher. Andre, thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to the Monday Morning Show.